This week's episode is sponsored by Amico & Co., the full-service refit shipyard at the heart of the Mediterranean, with large yacht facilities, in-house departments, and berthing in its waterfront marina. To find out more, visit amicoshipyard.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is our superyachts editor, Katia Damborski.
Hello, Stuart. So happy to be back on the podcast. It's been such a long time since I've been in the hot seat.
How long has it been? What, 4 or 5 weeks or something like that?
I think even longer. I feel like it's been quite a long time since I heard your cheery, jingly tones. The funny thing for all the people who don't work with Stuart is that Stuart's quite monotone most of the time, but as soon as he gets on the podcast, he's like a whole new person. Like, who's this employee that I've never met before, who's bubbly and upbeat?
I was told once that you should, whenever you're speaking into a microphone recording like this, you should always do it with a smile on your face, because apparently for some reason that it comes through in how you sound.
Right. Well, you're right, actually, because I can definitely see the difference.
So grumpy monotone Stew in the office, but cheery Stew on the podcast.
Yeah, that's it. But yeah, it's been a long time since I've been in the old podcast chair. And as you said, I am now with a new title. So Superyachts Editor. Very exciting stuff.
It is very exciting. So congratulations again. So Katia is the superyachts editor of Boat International Media, which basically means, it's a continuation of your current existence of constantly getting on and off superyachts.
Yeah, the reason for this promotion was Stuart was looking at me getting on board all these yachts and was like, right, digital editor. No, she's not in front of a screen enough. She's on too many yachts.
She's on too many yachts. Let's make a new job. And Superyachts Editor was the result. And it's very exciting. Actually, well, we're going to start by talking about one very well-known superyacht you recently stepped off. You were on board for a very special celebration. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, it was a super busy week from start to finish, actually. I feel like I'm kind of hibernating now because it was so, jumping from place to place. But it started with a huge high, one that I was super lucky to be able to do. And I think if you had realised how fun this would be, you would have thought twice about letting me do it. I was with John Cordwell, who you know as well. But for the podcast listeners who don't know, John is a British businessman best known for establishing Phones For You. And if you're not British, you won't know about the old Phones For You,
which no one can see you making these hand signals, by the way.
No, but they heard it in my voice.
They did hear it in your voice.
do you know that one, Stuart? Phones For You.
Yeah, I remember the excruciating adverts that were quite prominent on British TV for a long time. The jingle was definitely infectious.
Yeah. So all those excruciating ads and jingles brought John the 73-metre Lursen yacht Titania, which you may remember as a Poise. He picked her up at auction a few years ago, and then he lengthened her and got her ready for the charter fleet. And there's actually a very nice story about this written by Stuart a few years ago, which we will pop in the show notes because it's a very good read. And it just shows, I think, how nice and authentic John is. He's a really great person. Who invited me on board his boat, although we weren't there to talk about the boat. We were there to talk about John's philanthropy. So our visit coincided with Cordwell Children, which had its fundraising event known as the Butterfly Ball in the same week. And I just took a look before you started recording, and that event actually raised a record-breaking 1.6 million euros this year, which is massive.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, really good. And then those funds are being used to support disabled and autistic children, which is what the Cordwell Children Charity is all about. So that's the reason we were there, but the event also happened to fall on John's birthday. So we had the most surreal experience with John on board, me, two other journalists, John's lovely wife, Modesta, John's son, and a few other of his inner circle. And we were all singing and celebrating with John, which was so much fun. Definitely an experience to remember.
And you got premium digs on board, didn't you?
Oh, I so did. Yeah, I was in the second master. So right up at the top of the boat, woke up to a view across Port Hercule. Really special stuff.
Yeah, very, very special. It looked fantastic.
It was.
The story of how he got that boat is really interesting, because I remember when I spoke to him some years ago for that piece you mentioned, he previously owned Capri, another Lursen, and he wasn't having a great experience in the superyacht world, he said, and he was thinking about quitting yachting forever. He had owned, you know, various boats leading up to, you know, superyacht territory, and then he just happened to see this auction. So the Apoise, before she was converted to Titania, was owned by a famous auctioneering family, Ritchie Brothers, I think that's right. And so they thought they'd try a new way of selling this boat. So they auctioned it. And so I think it was in Grand Bahama. So he was there. There was a smattering of people in the room and a few telephone bidders. And they were kind of going up at €500,000 or pound increments to buy the boat. And he was watching the room, and the telephones were, you know, successively going quiet as people were quitting the auction. And eventually he picked it up for what it turns out to be an absolute song for a boat of that size and volume and pedigree. I can't remember the precise number he paid for it, but it was, you know, had it been a traditional sale, I imagine it would have sold for a lot more than it eventually went for to John. And he told me he felt guilty about it. He felt guilty because he got to really like the previous owner, and he felt like he was shortchanging them by picking up so cheaply. Yeah, I was very envious of that invite. It looked like heaps of fun. Second master cabin, that's a real treat. So what did the Boat International coffers extend to in terms of a birthday present?
Yeah, well, we did get him a gift. It was a slightly panicked gift, because we didn't really put together the whole birthday thing until the last minute. So it involved some running around Villefranche at 8 o'clock in the morning. A cruise had just docked, so I was kind of elbowing all the cruise passengers out the way. Like, I need to get this gift for this yacht owner. But what gift do you get for a yacht owner? Especially John, because John's, I think, pledged to the Just Giving pledge. So he's meant to be giving 70% of his wealth away over the course of his lifetime. He's got this massive yacht. He actually, you know, as part of the charity auctions that he does, one of the prizes is a charity stay on board Titania. So, you know, what do you get for someone like that? The answer is a very nice bottle of red, some chocolates, and a little, like a gold Formula One car, which I thought his young son might quite appreciate, because I thought when in Monaco, it was quite a nice.
That's nice.
Car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And were they well received?
I think so, yeah. I like to hope so.
In fact, John Corbell got me off sugar. John Corbell is the reason I no longer drink sugar in my tea, put sugar in my tea rather, because he's all about super clean eating, isn't he?
He is.
And he was telling me how harmful sugar is, and he made me feel very bad for taking tea with sugar. So the next day, no more sugar.
Wow. What's the strange thing about that story is that you drinking sugar in your tea up until like 5 years ago? Is that right?
Yeah.
What?
That's fine.
Stuart, that's flabbergasted me.
No longer. No more sugar.
Good. Well, thanks, John Corbell.
Yeah, thanks, John Corbell. But your Monaco adventures didn't end there, did they? Because then you were off to the yacht club to tell a crowded room about some of the latest superyacht stats.
That is exactly right. So I gave a little update on the state of the market, with data, of course, powered by Boat Pro. And I love those presentations, because they're quite similar, because the market doesn't change that much every time I do this presentation. But every time, everyone in the room is like, wow, like taking pictures, asking like a million questions at the end. And I always feel so like, yeah, our Boat Pro data is this good. So that was quite a nice boost to the old ego. And then I moderated a panel about many things, flag states being one of them. So that was a bit heavy. But then I actually got to speak on a panel, which was a surprise for me and probably a surprise for Espen, who was moderating it, because I kind of just got parachuted into this panel at the last minute, which was about social media, which is obviously, you know, my bag on the side of being Supers editor of Boat International. I also am quite involved in the social media, and that was really fun as well. I talked a lot about kind of how social media can never replace true journalism. And if you stop reading Boat International, I will hunt you down.
Name and shame on the Yacht Writer account.
Yeah, exactly. But also about how the landscape is changing and we do need to be a bit more reactive to social media. Actually, do you know what, Stu? I had some axes to grind about the pseudo yachting influencers. So I got up on stage and I ground those axes. So I'm sure the audience left a little bit fearful of me.
That's good.
Yeah.
There's a clutch of you guys that do it really, really well. And there's another group that don't do it quite so well, is my analysis.
Exactly. And it was an all-star team. I mean, it was David Seal, Matthias, Mr. Superyachts.
Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Superyachts. Yeah. Nice guy.
And then Steve Belay, who does the marketing for IYC.
So yeah. And then you jumped on a plane to Barcelona.
First, I got on a plane to Portugal to see our colleague Naomi get married. Naomi is our new head of social, I believe. So shout out Naomi Wilson, Naomi Mitchell these days, actually. And saw her get married, which was great. And then I was off to Barcelona. It's my first time in Spain. Can you believe that?
I can't believe that, no.
No. Well, there you go. I'm now the most well-travelled person in Boat International. Now I can cross Spain off the old list. But I went for the America's Cup, obviously. Well, not for the America's Cup. I went for Wally. But they organised this really, really incredible sailing event on board the new Wally Wind 110. So the first unit is Galma. I assume you've been on board, Stuart.
I have been on board. I met the owner and with Patrizia from Wally and Stefano. I was really, really impressed with that boat. The deck is sensational. How they've crammed that much. It's not a volume game on that boat, although the interior is obviously very lovely. It's a very, very clever deck arrangement. And you can have a horde of people up on that aft deck and it wouldn't feel crowded at all. It's very clever stuff. And it was interesting hearing from, well, Luca Bassani was there when I was on board as well, hearing from Luca Stefano and Patrizia kind of how they achieved it. They kind of raised the freeboard a bit, and so the boat's quite beamy. So they've done a really, really good job of packing a lot into a 110-foot package.
Yeah, and it sails beautifully as well. I mean, I'm not a sailor, as you well know, or if my dad's listening, I am totally a sailor, but... we went out sailing with Luca and it was absolutely sensational. It was really amazing. So we kind of watched part of the America's Cup and then we got out on the water and Luca was there kind of letting everyone get behind the wheel and talking about all the different things that he had envisioned when he first put pen to paper with this and then how it all came to life. And it was just, you know, sailing with a designer is extremely special, and that was brilliant. And also watching him commentate on the America's Cup was something I will not forget.
Yeah, he's a great company, isn't he, Luca?
Yeah.
Well, talking about the America's Cup, we should probably send a hearty congratulations to Emirates Team New Zealand for winning 7-2, a pretty comprehensive result that for the Kiwis. There was a brief ray of hope towards the end of the week when Ben and team picked off two wins, but then the Kiwis just came storming back and just dominated. The last three races, I think, and cleaned up. So, you know, taking nothing away from them. Ben Ainslie said that is the best America's Cup team in history, and it'd be hard to argue with that assessment. Three wins on the trot. They are just so dominant in the sport. So huge congrats. And perhaps foolishly, we called last week's podcast. This was just after Ben's two wins. We we called last week's podcast never bet against Sir Ben Ainslie, which was so my powers of prophecy are very, very, very bad, clearly, because the Kiwis went on to storm all the remaining races.
I don't think that's a power of prophecy. I think you might have just jinxed it for
Totally jinxed it for the Brits.
I think you're with them in Fonty.
Sorry, Ben and team. I shouldn't have said that. But the big question now is, where is it going next? So it was let slip shortly after the final race that Ineos will be the challenger of record again. So now the negotiations begin, really, and some various destinations were mooted, kind of, to me, when I was down in Barcelona. Jeddah, obviously, mentioned, given all the new interest in the Red Sea, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Italy was mentioned, Barcelona again, of course, but I think the sailing world would be really happy if it ended up in Cowes. So we shall see. I mean, we've got to consider the corporate element of the America's Cup as well, and there is an element of chasing the money for an event of that size scale. So yeah, it's going to take a little while, I think, before we get a resolution, but my heart says Cowes. My head probably says Jeddah, just because I think it'll be pretty compelling offer from the Saudis to take the America's Cup out to the Red Sea. But we shall see. Meanwhile, FLIBS next week. What time? When are you going down?
I'm heading out on Tuesday, I think. What about you?
I'll be flying out Monday morning on that BA flight with half the super yacht industry. So if you're listening, I'll see you on the plane. but it's lots of boats. You know, Raphael, every day we get a new update from Raphael. Last week we said there was something like, you know, was it 259? No, 159. 259, was it? Super yachts over 24 meters in attendance. Catch you hurriedly checking my numbers there.
168, dear listener.
160, I was nowhere near it, 168. But there's more and more coming in every day, it seems. So the numbers of super yachts over 24 metres is well above average for this edition of FLIBS, which is really, really exciting. But it's actually a smaller boat that I'm quite interested in seeing, which is it's only 14 metres long, and it's a foil-assisted catamaran from Vandal Marine. And it was designed by someone you referenced a little earlier, Espinoino. So it's a multi-hull, which I love, obviously. And it comes with some great design pedigree with Espen involved. He actually owns one of these models as well. And the project came about, I remember Espen telling me in Cannes a few years ago, because he was looking to buy a boat, but there was nothing on the market that really, really struck him, that he really wanted to spend his money on. So he decided I'll just design one for myself. So he teamed up with Scott Judson from Judson Marine Design, who's an expert in multi-hull naval architecture. And what they came up with is this real kind of 4x4 of the sea, this super tough aluminium boat that is incredibly stable. It's got a foil running between at about amidships between the two sponsons that keeps things very efficient and steady. And it just looks so cool. You get loads of outside space, a couple of double berths in the forward sections. Can do 40 knots and cruises very comfortably at 28. And for South Florida, it is sort of the perfect boat, because you get lots of that outside space, and it's just for blasting to the Bahamas and doing some fishing and blasting back to Miami or Fort Lauderdale or Palm Beach. I can see it going down a storm with that market down there. So the one at the show is asking $1.25 million. And I had a look over one of the hulls in Cannes when I a few years ago, as I mentioned, and yeah, loved it. So I'm very, very excited to see this new one and getting reacquainted.
How long did you say it was again?
So it's just 14 metres long, 46 feet. So there's lots of very, very big stuff at the show. And I'm obviously very, very excited about seeing lots of large yachts. But this particular boat has a very special place in my heart. I really would quite like one. You've chosen a big one, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm curious about this one. Do you know of it? She's called Amadeus.
Yeah, I know a bit, yeah.
So So how long has she been floating about for? Because in my head, I've never, it's rare that I see a boat that I've never heard head nor tail of. But what is this? Has she been around for a while now?
Yeah, she's a conversion from the 60s. I can't quite recall when she was converted into an expedition yacht, but she's, I mean, we've been talking a lot about conversions on the podcast and in the magazine recently, just because it seems to be a growing part of the market, and I need to check the numbers with Raphael. And we'll talk about another really cool conversion concept in a minute, but it's something that I think the market's going to further embrace. And there's a few pioneers in this field. You know, we've got one on the cover of the November issue at the moment, which is Jester, of course, the former spy ship converted into a super yacht. And this is another one. So she was converted from a research vessel into a very, very capable explorer super yacht.
Yeah, so I chose this boat because she's very cool looking. So it's our friends at Vrypak behind the lines, so you know it's going to be looking quite cool. And she was actually converted back in, I think, 2007, or at least that's when the conversion was finished. So actually quite old, but she looks really good still. And it was Jade Yachts that did the conversion, which I don't think they're in business anymore, are they? Or they kind of produce something every now and again, but not with much regularity.
Jade Werft, I'm not sure. That's a question for Raphael of what's happened.
Yeah, so she's on display with Burgess, and I believe she just had a small refit or kind of maintenance period. So there will be something new to see about her. She's 70 metre, and as Stuart said, she was originally built by Neue Jade Werft in 1969. And then she was used for research purposes until this big conversion. So yeah, I'm curious. I want to see what all that volume is hiding.
She got a great flair on her bow.
Exactly, yeah.
Amadeus. But yeah, really, really quite attractive bow section.
And a cool name as well. I like that name. I'd keep that name, cool name, I think.
Yeah. But very excitingly, this year at FLIBS, Boat International has a brand new stand.
No way. Hold the front page.
Hold
Kick
the front
Jester
page.
Off. This is the story.
This is the big one. So we've moved down the dock a bit. So those of you who have been visited us in Fort Lauderdale before, we had this quite large floating air-conditioned tent, basically, which was lovely and large, and you know, it was great to welcome people in. We've still got quite a large air-conditioned area, but we also now have a long stretch of kind of outside shaded seating along the water, which is very cool. So we've shunted down maybe, I don't know, 100 metres. If you're looking at the face dock from the water, we've moved to the left. So we're not far from where we usually are, but just keep walking a bit further down there and you'll see Boat International. So yeah, come and see the new stand. I'm very excited to see it for the first time in a couple of days. The aircon's wonderful, very powerful. Come for a coffee or a drink or a beer, something a bit more fun in the afternoon, and say hello.
Do you think this new stand format will mean people will stop mistaking us for the information centre, which most people do?
That's true. Lots of people wandering in, looking lost, saying, do you know where to find Princess?
You say, yeah. And then they look supremely offended when you say, no, we're not information, we're a magazine. Can you see we've got magazines?
But we still direct them because we're nice people.
Personally, I don't. I've got too many things to be getting on with. This is why you're the face of things, Stuart, and I'm not.
Just answer with a smile. Yeah, just keep walking down the dock. You'll find them. I wanted to... another thing that's got me very excited, actually, is a new story that ran, I saw yesterday on the website, which is a new concept. So talking about conversions, this is a new concept from Ocean Co. and Mario Bifarali, Design. So what they've done is take... 150 meter container ship and turned it into a super yacht. So being a jaded old boat journo, most concept stories pass me by. They're kind of white noise now, but so it takes something pretty special for me to stop and stare. And this one really did. I have no idea if it's remotely feasible. I really hope it is because it's very, very cool. You know, you see these hulking container ships getting, you know, run onto beaches in parts of the world and cut up for scrap. And I, you know, I always think it's, you know, a shame to see a boat die like that. So The thoughts often occurred to me, I wonder what would happen if, you know, is it even possible to convert something like that into some kind of luxury vessel? And Ocean Co and Mario Bifarelli have had the same thoughts. This concept takes a 10,630 gross ton container ship and, in concept at least, have turned it into a very cool luxury platform, complete with a huge pool, you know, loads of outside lounging space, obviously, given that, you know, vast deck area out the front. And there's some sports courts on the boat as well. And it reminds me a lot of that kind of crazy semi-submersible yacht, OK, which was converted at Karmarine Shipyard in Turkey a few years ago, with Timur Bozkır handling the design on that project. So that particular boat started life in 1982 in Japan as a vessel called Super Servant 3 until it was converted into a yacht. And this concept takes that kind of one step further, and I absolutely love it. I think so. I'm becoming increasingly obsessed with the idea of repurposing old ships, and I'd love to see someone take on a project like this. I think it's great.
Yeah. I'm also a big believer in this. I really like the idea of it, and I think it will become more common. But then at the same time, you do see quite a lot of issues coming up when you're trying to convert something that's just not a yacht into something that is a yacht. I think it's quite easy. It probably is easier if you're starting with the yacht, like what Ocean Co did with H3, which was already, you know, laid out at least roughly like a luxury vessel, and then they just completely gutted it and changed it. But I imagine if you're working with a platform that's got a lot of technical equipment and technical spaces, you need to do a lot more kind of stripping back. I mean, do you remember Ragnar? That took a hell of a lot of work to get fighting fit.
Yeah. I think perhaps that's the mistake people make. And the story that ran in the November issue about converting a research vessel or commercial vessel into a super yacht was quite instructive for me, because naively you kind of think, oh, well, you know, you've already got the hull, surely it's just going to be a much cheaper project. But actually, I learned in reading that piece and speaking to some of the people involved in it that costs can get completely out of control with a project like that, and it can take years and years and years. So you need an excellent project team, obviously. But you've really got to know what you're getting into as well. And actually, Jan Verkerk, you know, the past master at converting commercial ships into super yachts, obviously he did Legend and Shere Khan. He made the comment in the piece, I think I'm quoting him correctly, he said, "All old boats, they stink. There's nothing happy about an old boat." And I think converting an old container ship would certainly, it'd smell a bit. But, you know, if you got oodles of cash and lots of time and a good team and plenty of patience, I think it'd be such a cool project.
Yeah. Well, this is definitely very cool, as you said. This does not look like a stinky boat. This looks like a new, cool, all guns blazing, bells and whistles boat, which I like.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome. It's awesome. We obviously need, my technical knowledge of converting container ships into super yachts is lacking. So I'll probably find out. I'll ask someone with real expertise at the Fort Lauderdale show, and they'll tell me it's a completely stupid idea. But naively, I think it's very, very cool. Actually, so a couple of those boats I just mentioned are making their way, or actually are currently now in the Red Sea. I know Shere Khan's there, as well as plenty of others. So I've been watching the AIS tracker on Boat Pro fervently for the last week or so, because it's been really interesting watching a succession of super yachts make their way through the Suez to Sindala, because Sindala Island, one of these NEOM giga projects, the first one that's certainly kind of marine facing or boat facing, is opening. It's having its grand opening presently, and a whole heap of super yachts have made their way to the island for the celebration.
That's pretty exciting. So you were there last 3 or 4 years ago, was it, to kind of see them lay the ground? No,
it was two years ago. I think I was there 2 years ago, in entirely the wrong time of year. It was in August, so all I did was sweat, and it was excruciatingly hot. But but it was amazing to see the scale of this island, and it was obviously all very dusty and, you know, under development at the time. So I can't wait to see some photos coming out of this weekend to see the completed or how complete it is. I hope it is completed, just for, you know, the experience it can offer and all those things. But yeah, it's really exciting. So, you know, this is the first piece of the puzzle, really, in, you know, drawing super yachts out of the Med, draining the Med of super yachts at the end of the season into the Red Sea, to extend, you know, the yachting calendar a little bit and divert a bit of that Caribbean traffic into the Red Sea. You know, only time will tell whether they are successful in that mission. But Sindala is certainly, you know, a big piece, a big, big piece of that puzzle. And some big boats have made their way down to the island. 123-meter Golden Odyssey is there. Obviously, we saw her in Monaco, 99-meter Christina O, 94.6-meter Opari, 86-meter Ecstasy, 85-meter Victorious. So they've got some real, you know, some big names have made the trip. And as we record this right now, we count 40 super yachts in the immediate vicinity of Sindala, either in its new marina or anchored just off the island.
Nice. So, it's no small number. I guess the second piece of this puzzle will be, have you seen this new kind of incentivizing discount for yachts traveling down the Suez has just been announced a few days ago?
I did see the story, and it's kind of long overdue, really. When we've been talking to various, you know, Saudi authorities for a long time, and you repeatedly make the point, and they've really heeded it, that the passage through the Suez Canal is a real impediment for a lot of people, because it is very expensive for big boats to get through the canal. And it's not always the most pleasant, you know, passage, with, you know, lots of, you know, cartons of cigarettes being handed out here, there and everywhere to, you know, smooth your progress. Mm. But a big step taken by the authorities to make it a bit easier for people. So why don't you tell us just a bit more about what the detail of that is?
Yeah, I'll tell you just super briefly, but it's quite long and there's lots of terms and conditions, but the basic story is that the transit and berthing fees can be cut by up to 50%, and this is the Suez Canal Authority that's behind this incentive. So it's yachts with a gross tonnage of less than 300 tons will receive a 20% discount on return transit fees, provided they travel from the Red Sea to the Mediterranean within 60 days of their outbound voyage. And then vessels staying at the Ismailia Yacht Marina for more than 90 days will also qualify for a 20% discount on their return journey, regardless of the direction. So it's kind of about getting yachts, as you said, bridging that journey between the Med and the Red Sea, and then also using this new yachting marina, which I'm sure will have some really great facilities, because obviously it's neon behind this, so it will be very state-of-the-art and very modern, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm going to keep my beady eye on AIS, on the Boat Pro Fleet Tracker, to see who else turns up in time for the grand opening. But I wish, obviously, everyone well. It's I hope it goes fantastically well. And I can't wait to see some photos and the video from it all. It'd be great to see lots of super yachts in and around the island for the opening.
Absolutely. Well, this new incentive starts from the 1st of November. So after that, I'm sure we'll see a pretty big uptick in the number of visiting yachts. So why don't we talk some brokerage picks, Stuart? Why don't you kick us off? Tell me, what would you buy, or what do you think our dear listeners should buy?
Well, I'm always incredibly selfish with these choices. So I'm going the new 53-meter Diamond Yacht Support Vessel Five Oceans, which is up for grabs, asking 34.95 million euros with a Verpica Dolling. So again, this kind of fits into my increasing passion for, you know, rugged commercial looking boats. It's a support vessel, but it has a very high level of customization inside. So it's very, very comfortable and suitable for use as a standalone vessel. It doesn't have to run a support vessel. You can run it as a super yacht. And the broker said the boat was built with no budget limitations. So Five Oceans can carry 16 guests and 10 crew, but really this boat is all about that aft deck and the huge crane for lifting various fun things in and out of the water. Subs, chase boats, PWCs, ATVs, you name it, this boat can carry it. and it can shift. Top speed is 19 knots, and it can range 5,000 nautical miles between tanks. But I just love the design of these boats. Darman really, you know, has done a fantastic job of carving out quite a powerful niche in this market. And especially these boats can kind of cross over, you know, blur the lines between superyacht and support vessel. And I think if your focus is maximizing your fun on the water instead of the plushness of your cushions, these Darman yachting support vessels just tick all those boxes. And this particular one, Five Oceans, is box fresh. And she's currently lying in Monaco, if you want to take a peek for yourself. So Five Oceans is my pick for this week.
That's a pretty respectable pick. I have to say that aft deck you talked about, that's full of toys and tenders, also makes a very good party deck. And I know that because Darman Yachting threw a very, very good party on board the boat in Monaco. And it was packed with people, and you know, you'd never feel like you were kind of pushing people out of the way. It's great fun. So
yeah, perfect. Great. Yeah. Party platform, sub platform, car platform, tank, you know, but shipping crates on it for research purposes or what, you know, you can do whatever you like, basically. It's awesome for that.
Yeah. But I have not gone for that. So yours is asking 34.95 million euros. Ooh, that's pricey, Stuart. Do you know why I'm on this podcast? Is to give the listeners a nice budget-friendly boat.
Value option.
That's what they're looking for. Okay. And normally I try and go for under 5 mil, but that wasn't an option this time. So I've gone for under 10 mil. But that's actually not just the only reason I've chosen it. It's a Tanzanite, so a 44.2-metre Westship yacht. She's for sale with Mark Elliott of IYC, and she just had 1 million knocked off that price. So she's now in budget at $9.9 million. And she's on display in Fort Lauderdale, so actually much more appropriate than your Monaco pick.
Yeah, you're right. It's much more appropriate.
Yeah, no, I did think this through. But actually, the reason I like her is because she's 44.2 metres and she's got 424 gross tonnes, which feels like quite a lot at that length. So I'm quite curious to know. Well, I'll definitely get on board in Fort Lauderdale and tell you all about it. But I think I'm curious to see where all that volume has been used and how it's been used. Because at the moment, they've got this kind of quite contemporary, but almost like 2010s contemporary vibe going on, which I really quite like. It feels a bit throwbacky. I felt like it's like a kind of disco theme in the Sky Lounge, and it's a bit wacky. You know, I love a slightly, you know, out of the box boat. Your boat's box fresh, mine's out of the box. So Tanzanite, that's my pick. I like the name, I like the boat, I like a good sturdy American built boat.
Yeah, definitely some bright poppy colours. I know the owners of this one, and they're lovely, lovely people. And actually, they let us host our boat international party at their home in Fort Lauderdale for many years. So I'm glad you picked this one to give it a bit of a plug. And they refitted it quite comprehensively a few years ago. So it's in, you know, it should be in very, very good nick, this boat. And they stuck it at the end of their garden for a long time. It's always nice, those massive Fort Lauderdale homes where you can stick a 44-metre superyacht at the end of the garden, just popping down to the boat.
I knew that name was familiar. I've seen it. I think I've heard of it as like one of those famous boats that sits at the end of someone's garden. Yeah. That's why it's coming back to me. Nice.
Yeah, so not far from a big refit, and yours for just a snip under $10 million. So she will be at the show. So go have a look. If you very contemporary, lots of bold colours. Yeah, nice boat. And, you know, the classic kind of American motor yacht lines, I think.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you can't not like the lines of this boat. They're just, they're very, very pleasing on the eye. Mm. All righty, Tanzanite or Five Oceans? That's your choice. Five Oceans, of course. Actually, I'd go for either because I like Tanzanite too.
Stuart's so thinking about these future parties we're going to have to host.
He's like, we'll never be allowed back. Please pick Tanzanite. all right, let's get through some headlines. I'll kick us off with the news that the landmark 119-metre fuel cell-powered FedShip Superyacht Project 821 is on sea trials. The world's first fuel cell-powered superyacht Project 821 hit the water this May and joined the market with Edmiston shortly after. The Breakthrough project stores liquid hydrogen on board and uses a fuel cell source to generate electricity for both hotel load and coastal navigation. The project required significant development in regulations for hydrogen storage and fuel cell systems at class, flag state and IMO level. According to FedShip, exterior and interior design was by British studio RWD. So Jan Bart Vikul, the CEO at Royal Van Lent, said the aim has been to develop a new clean technology, not just for this project, but for the world. So it's a really ambitious project, this. And I remember Jan Bart came to the design festival, I think it was in Milan, just at the tail end of COVID, and kind of, you know, revealed a bit more about this project. And it was really exciting to hear, because I think that was the first time it was, there'd been a, you know, a big public acknowledgement of the technology on board. Mm. So we really got the scoop on that one. And it's great to see her out on sea trials. And I hope the tech is working nicely. And she's and she proves a lot of technology as well. That's really important. It's one of these kind of breakthrough projects.
Yeah, she's a real pioneer. And I think it's interesting, you know, this fuel cell is going to be powering the propulsion as well, which is, I don't think we've ever seen this before, right? It's only been hotel load up until now. So really massive breakthrough.
Yeah, I think that's right. Meanwhile, some more green tech news from San Lorenzo.
Yeah. So San Lorenzo has announced the Life Mystic project. Mystic stands for Methanol for Yachting Sustainable Energy Transition Applied to Internal Combustion Engines. Try saying that three times quickly. And this project aims to develop the first green methanol biofuel superyachts by 2027. So this is co-funded by the European Union, which is really great to see some kind of governing bodies getting involved in yachting and sustainability. And the project will invest a total of 4.8 million euro over 54 months to test engines and generators for superyachts powered through a combination of diesel and methanol. So that's what biofuel is, I think. It's combining both both methanol and diesel, and trying to let them live kind of side by side simultaneously. Is that right?
I'm nodding like I know what I'm talking about, but I'm just going to go with what you said.
I think it is, because I actually remember when I was interviewing Mr. Perotti for Almax, which is their fuel cell powered super yacht, he was talking to me about biofuel, and I did kind of press him on what this was, and he said, no, you have to wait, there's a big announcement coming, and this is probably the big announcement, but I'm pretty sure that is what that is. But this completed vessel is expected to house two high-speed four-stroke manned diesel engines developed in collaboration with Ranieri Tunisi, along with two four-stroke diesel generators from Nani Industries, the latter of which will use a biofuel adaptation kit to operate with both green methanol and diesel. So very technical stuff there. I hope maybe we can get an interview with Mr. Perotti to kind of explain a little bit more about this system, how it works, and put it in slightly more plain terms for us to then explain to you on a future podcast episode.
Yeah, that'd be great. It'd be great to get him on the podcast, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. He's a great chat talker.
But yeah, another, you know, San Lorenzo, they don't stop on this front, do they? They are very, very committed to the decarbonisation of the yachting industry and its power supply. So good on them for this project. Yeah, and we look forward to hearing a bit more. Meanwhile, an update on a story we brought you last week about Holtermann Shipyard in the Netherlands. Well, Steliots, a Dutch builder based in Steinwijk, has acquired Holtermann Shipyard following reports the latter had declared bankruptcy and was actively exploring takeover options. According to Steliots, the deal provides the yard with much-needed production capacity as it attempts to keep up with rising industry demand. With 16 new motor yachts currently under construction, the strategic location of Holtermann Shipyard, just 10 minutes from Steliots' existing facilities, offers substantial opportunities for further growth in the high-end segment of aluminium and steel-built motor yachts, the yard said of the news. So a good result there.
That's interesting. Are you very familiar with the Stihler yachts, guys, or not really?
I'm relatively familiar with the range. They came from, like a lot of these Dutch yards, they started with, you know, much smaller boats, but have, you know, progressed, you know, up the size ranges. So Stihler yachts are building some much bigger boats nowadays. They're very, very stylish, very, very cool looking boats.
Nice, good result then. Well, a shame for Holtermann, which we're doing quite nicely with that whole Extreme series, right? That's the whole Lady Fleur line.
Yeah, that was one of our most watched social media videos of all time, because it had that kind of mad aft deck that kind of went down, the pool filled, and it came back up again.
Absolutely.
All righty, why don't you talk us through, we've got some brokerage news for you concerning the month of September. Obviously a big month for the brokerage market, given there's so many boat shows, Cannes, Southampton, Genoa, Monaco, etc., which you went to basically all of them, didn't you?
Sadly, I did, yes. And I still haven't done my expenses. So shout out to the finance guy who has to deal with all of that when they come through.
Well, why don't you have a dig around the brokerage market in September? What can you tell us about what happened last month?
Okay, so there were 23 brokerage sales of boats over 24 metres, which is, by the way, where all of our data starts, over 24 metres, in the month of September, with a total combined asking price of €354 million. So that was a bit of a drop on September 2023, which saw 27 sales. I think that's kind of to be expected, knowing kind of where the market is right now, but not a massive drop. I mean, 23 versus 27 is not huge. The average value of boats sold in September was down €16.9 million, down from €21.8 million in September 23, but last year's number was skewed by the big ticket sale of the Lursen yacht Mad Summer. In comparison, the biggest sale this September was the winch-designed 90-metre Lursen Phoenix 2, which was asking €125 million. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the new sales listings in the month?
Sure. There were 43 new sales listings in September with a combined asking price of €424.9 million, which compares to 51 new listings in the same period in 2023. The most expensive new listing last month was the 65-metre Fedship Wedge 2, which regular listeners will know that was my brokerage pick last week.
The had I been on the podcast, I would have beaten you to that, because you're right, that's a very nice boat.
You would have picked that too.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was going first before you.
With the Starkitect, Philip Stark design, inside and out, very distinctive wooden sections in the superstructure. Yeah, very nice boat. Mm. A lot of interest in that boat. So we'll see if it goes soon. Another notable new listing was a boat we've already mentioned on the podcast, was 123-metre Golden Odyssey, which would undoubtedly have pipped Wedge 2 to be the most expensive new listing, but sadly it's POA. So we don't know the exact number the broker's looking for on Golden Odyssey. And that was the month of September in brokerage terms.
And that also brings us to the end of the podcast. Thank you for having me again, Stuart. What do I need to do to be on a future episode? Do I need to kill myself by traveling back to back to like five different countries in a week? Or
you got to come on with some good stories, like having birthday with John Cordwell on his 73-meter super yacht. So more of that content, please.
Right. Okay. I'll get right on that.
Few more fancy birthday invitations and sailing with Luca Bassani.
Okay, I'll work on always, it. Well.
Always welcome. Excellent. Well, thank you everyone for listening to this week's edition of Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Naomi Mitchell now and Adam Geist. It was a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we will see you next time.